What is up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we talk about a bunch of comics that have come out this week. And guess what? Comics are coming out again.
Yeah, we're back, baby.
You know what? I thought they were fooling us with that last week, but they weren't. Comics still coming out.
Yeah. It felt like a classic prank where they give you what you want and then take it right away. But here we are, week two, comics galore.
And it was nice to be able to go to, Diamond and see the comics again.
I love it when a big corporation comes back. That just,
yeah.
Particularly if they have a monopoly, it makes me so happy.
I mean, fuck Diamond Comics, obviously. But I've been going to the same website to look at what comics come out next week, and it was nice to be able to have that back, is all I'm saying.
Exactly. Pete likes websites, and that's great. Websites are great. They're like addresses on the internet.
What's your favorite website, Justin? Mine is google.com.
Oh, wow. That's a good one.
Mine's yahoo.com.
Yahoo, great. Wow. Really covering all the bases. Yeah, Yahoo News, great news source.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, because comics are back, we're going to do a extra large stack once again are reviewing almost, I don't want to promise everything, but almost everything that came out today, Wednesday, as well as the DC comics that came out on Tuesday. They are continuing with their Tuesday schedule, even though everybody else is going back to the normal stuff. I don't know.
That's a fight. The comics come a day early.
Do we have to move our live show to Monday now if comics start coming out on Tuesday?
Jesus, I can't do that. I'm busy.
What are you, crazy? Monday's blocked up. Tuesday's
That's when Blue Bloods is on. I don't know if that's true, actually. But
it's a strong guess, though. I like it. Tuesdays are my day with my boys, so I can't change that.
Yeah, there we go. Aww. Let's jump into this because we do have a big old stack to go through. Kicking it off with Amazing Spider-Man number 43 from Marvel Comics, written by Nick Spencer. Hold on. Jesus
you
Christ.
You started with that one, you fuck.
We go, as always, in alphabetical order.
No,
so,
we don't.
Written by Nick Spencer, penciled by Ryan Ottley. Wow. The backup is penciled by Francesco. My autocorrect is Mobilizations, which is definitely.
You don't think that's his name? Francesco Mobilizations?
I apologize to whatever your real name is, Francesco Mobilizations.
Apologies, Mr. Mobilizations. We misspelled Francesco.
Anyway, if you haven't read Amazing Spider-Man,
it's probably mobile home.
Spider-Man, aka Peter Parker, has been roommating with Boomerang. They both kind of know each other's secret identities, but not really. And they've been teaming up to find this mystical artifact that the Kingpin has also been after. In this issue, they mostly tangle with a gigantic monster named Gog. Not Mad Gog.
Who's an adorable monster at the same time.
Baby Gog. What did you guys think about this issue? Pete, I know what you thought. Let's go to Justin first.
Is it Francesco Mattina?
There you go. That's probably what it is.
Nice.
That's a guess. That's only some not great Googling or Yahooing or my favorite website, Bing. I like this a lot because I feel like Nick Spencer's run has been all about getting back to fun. Like, it's chasing the fun of Spider-Man. Obviously, he's a big fan of Boomerang and getting him in here because that's because of Deadly Foes of Spider-Man. But while a lot of Dan Slott's run that came before was about sort of the emotional core and dealing with Spider-Man's inherent guilt with everything, this feels a little bit more like Spider-Man is bouncing around between the different crises in his life and just like having fun and solving problems. And I like that as a changeup.
The art is fantastic in this book.
Thanks, Pete, for that pregnant pause there. I agree with you. I think to the point where this was a surprisingly light issue, given that everything that is going on, where it's basically Spider-Man and Boomerang get a new pet. That's sort of the whole point of the issue. And I was surprised when it was done.
It's Francesco Mana.
Oh, thank you very much.
But yes, I agree with you.
Yeah. I enjoyed it. I think, honestly, this is one that'll probably feel better in a collection just because it goes so rapidly. But I've been enjoying this run a lot. I think I agree with you, Pete, that Ryan Ottley's art is so good. It's such a perfect match for Spider-Man. It's such a pleasure to see him on this. So I'm having fun reading this book.
Congrats.
Let's move on then.
Pete, understated excitement, not having it over here for Pete is in the return of comics.
There you go. Teen Titans number 41 from DC Comics. The script by Adam Glass and Robbie Thompson. Pencils by Eduardo Ferreira. And the Teen Titans are dealing with the thing where Damian Wayne, as usual, messed things up because he had a secret prison and things go haywire from there. What do you think about this issue?
I mean, secret prisons are not a good idea. You know what I mean? I mean, prisons, they're problematic. You know, I mean, it's just, you know, especially for-profit prisons, you know, I mean, it's just.
Wow.
You know.
Coming out strong here, Pete. Yeah.
I think this is fun. I haven't read Teen Titans in a while, so this lineup of characters, I was like, whoa, who are all these people? I like the interplay. I like the young Lobo that we have.
Oh,
here.
Yeah, the girl Lobo was fantastic. I really enjoyed her dialogue. I thought that was really fun.
And just seeing, having her be like a badass, but also a character that is like, please don't go. She says to Jin, the character, and like I thought that was nice that she had, like all the characters feel like they have an emotional core at the same time. They're just like a bunch of teens kicking ass.
So I mentioned this on the live show, but I've been going back and reading through JSA, the whole run that Jeff.
Yeah,
Johns
why don't you
did.
Flex some more on that? I mean, not is it not flexing. Enough to fucking brag on one podcast? You got to brag on the stack.
And
too?
My brag, to be clear, is that I can read. Go ahead.
Exactly. That's not much of a flex. Let's just be cool about that.
Yeah. So anyway, I've been going back. The reason I bring this up is I've been going back.
Yeah.
And
what is
through,
the real reason you're bringing this
Jesus
up?
Jesus Christ! Look,
contentious.
Oh my God. So during the JSA run by Jeff Johns, which at this point is a decade old or something like that, he deals a lot with the character of Jakeem Thunder. Jakeem Thunder has the Thunderbolt, the genie, and there's a weird hint in his run that he starts getting like these flashing eyes, and there's hints that, ooh, maybe Jakeem has the power of the Thunderbolt without having to call it out of its lantern, which in this case is a pen. And it's crazy to me that I read this comic book, Teen Titans 41, that came out in 2020, where Jakeem is finally like, whoa, you mean the power of the Thunderbolt was inside of me the whole time? Like, that's insane that that took 10 years to actually come out in a story, but I'm glad it did.
Yeah. And Damian sort of has some comeuppance here, which is always nice to see.
Yeah.
And Pete, you liked it.
Oh, yeah.
20XDX number 4, or 220XX, whatever you want to call it. I went with the Homestar Runner parlance. From Image Comics, story and script by Lauren Keeley, story script assets, illustrations, lettering, and design by Jonathan Luna. If I remember correctly.
Just one
of the Lunas. If I remember correctly, this takes place in a world that's been hit by a plague. Very weird, very futuristic.
Yes.
Nobody knows what it's like. But the people who survive the plague come out with abilities. And that's what we're following up on here. There's different gangs. There's been a murder. There's people who are tracing it down. Thoughts on this issue?
Well, it's weird because it also has this start where it's kind of like the X-Men books where they're giving symbols and talking about elements and shit like that, which kind of pulls me out of it a little bit because X-Men right now is bullshit. But I think that the art is great, and it's some interesting storytelling. It's kind of hard because I haven't been reading everything before it, so a little tough jumping in point. But, you know, like a lot of the Lunar Brothers stuff, it's very creative and very unique.
Yeah, this feels like very much in line with a lot of the other Lunar Brothers stuff. I read Sword, that whole series. It's the same kind of thing where it's like, a lot of people, there's some sort of secrets between them, but they are in contact. And then a bunch of people have some version of psychic powers. People die sort of very plainly in front of you. So it's all those hallmarks of those books. If you like other Lunar Brothers stuff, I think you'll like this.
My only qualm about it, and I do really like the action stuff and the character work throughout, and Jonathan Luna's art is phenomenal as always. It's very talky, like to a fault, yeah. I think.
Another thing with a lot of the Lunar Brothers stuff is there's just so much chat.
Yeah, it just got to be a little much where it felt like this dialogue needs to be cut down a little bit. It's still a good book. There's good characters in it. There's some interesting sci-fi stuff, but it was a little much for me at points. Moving on to The Low, Low Woods, number 5 from DC Comics / Hill House Comics. This is Joe Hill's line by Carmen Maria Machado and art by Danny. So this is big secrets coming out of The Low, Low Woods. We find out what has been going on in those woods that whole time, specifically to the men and the women, and how things have been going different and how things have been going terribly for pretty much everybody. Man, I love the Hill House line, and I like this book quite a bit. It's just dark and upsetting in exactly the right way.
This issue especially, I thought, was just a really great, almost like a short story that could exist on as a standalone issue. Just really well done across the board. The sort of horror concepts were really great. The characters were really nice. The art's great and sort of like sketchy and witchy while still feeling comic booky. Like, I love this issue.
It's scary as fuck, man.
Yeah. Great. Thanks, Pete. Any other comments? Did you like it, Pete? Or were you just...
You were scared.
Yeah, I'm scared. It's fucking creepy shit.
You just peed. You peed a little bit.
No, not a little bit.
A lot? You peed a lot?
So you peed a lot.
You just soaked the whole floor.
I've been fucking day drinking, man. It gets you.
Oh, man. Oh, God. Have you really been... I want to know, honestly, if you've been day drinking.
No,
we're journalists, and journalists never day drink.
Yesterday,
I was day drinking.
Oh, sure. But that was Memorial Day. I mean, that's a different thing. My son today, in the middle of the day, so I do work at the kitchen table, and he's usually at the couch doing his work, and after he's done doing his schoolwork, he plays video games. He came over to me today, and he was like, "Will you play Super Smash Brothers with me? If you play Super Smash Brothers, you can have as much beer as you want." And I was like,
wow. Did you should have taken him up on that and then been like, "Sorry, Marnie, I'm getting wasted."
And the cat's in the cradle and the silver spoon, the little boy blue and the man in the moon.
That's so have you been drinking yes, all and day, then there was bro? A puff of smoke and he was like, "Got you." I got sucked out to hell.
That's so the new generational switch right there, man.
Yeah. Made me feel very weird about the whole situation. Anyway, Vengeance of Vampirella number 7 from Dynamite Comics, written by Thomas Snegowski and art by Michael Stamaria. So this takes place in the far future. The world has been taken over by demons. Vampirella has been resurrected, and she is the only one, even in her scantily clad form, who can take the fight to these demons. We've been, I think, pretty complimentary about a lot of the Vampirella stuff that's come out from Dynamite recently, particularly because it's gotten away from the cheesecake format of the books. How'd you feel about this? How'd that fit into that realm?
Well, I mean, you know, I wouldn't sneak up on a vampire while they're sleeping. I just wouldn't do it. You know, I would loudly announce myself coming into a room if I knew I had to wake up a vampire, and I feel like that's good advice for people.
Thanks,
interesting Pete. Classic review of a comic book. I don't sneak up on vampires. To your point about the cheesecake-ness of it, this feels like it's gone very hard in the other direction, maybe even too far. It feels like there's so much world plot stuff that we're getting into here that, like, I don't know what the core of the character is anymore. This feels like a epic sci-fi space quest when it could be just a much more, it doesn't have to be cheesy. It can be much more of a just character on the ground who's a vampire figuring shit out.
The stuff that was much more interesting to me is they focus a little bit on the villain, Nyx, who is a woman. She's working for the Lords of Hell, and she's basically, as one does. And she's basically like, Vampirella is back. Everybody loves me on Earth because I'm the person who gave Earth over to the demons. So screw you guys. I'm going to destroy all of you. I enjoyed that part. I enjoyed focusing on her to the point you're making, Justin. It felt like Vampirella just wasn't as clear. I don't know who she is or anything like that, but hopefully that'll become clear in further issues.
Yeah, and I like the stuff at the end where she's in the mansion, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
And it's a bunch of stuff that feels very disconnected from the other stuff. But
I just feel like if you're going to be like, okay, we're not going to focus on the Vampirella kind of like TNA situation, then just kind of like don't show it and, you know, kind of really focus on the other aspects of her so we can kind of get to know the other parts, you know?
Like throw a sweater on, you're saying.
Mm-hmm. Or, you know, just how she's drawn or whatever, however you want to do it, you know?
Right. But if they did a title that was like Sweaters of Vampirella or something like that, I think that would be pretty popular.
Or a light jacket.
Oh, yes. Like sure. A members only Vampirella jacket.
Oh, that would be sick, dude.
No, sick windbreaker.
Some sweet kicks. She could wear some sweet kicks.
Don't fucking play with my emotions. Okay.
Vampirella wind bleeder.
You're hired.
Hollywood. Next, 1920s Hollywood.
The next title, Terrifics, number 27 from DC Comics, written by Gene Luen Yang and pencils by Sergio Davila. I'll mention, if you haven't listened to it, check out our live show with Gene Luen Yang from a couple of weeks ago, where he talked about Superman smashes the Klan. It was super fun to have him on.
Yeah.
The Terrifics, bunch of smart folks going into a cave and poking things until they explode, is basically the idea of this issue. What'd you think?
So much going on. I love the use of all of these characters, sort of characters that live on the outskirts of so many DC books. Great to see them all here. I didn't read the last issue, so I don't know everything that's going on. But I like sort of the structure of being inside the building and outside the building and catching up with all of the, we do follow the emotional threads of the story as it's going.
Yeah, it was funny because, like, right on the cover, it's like all the smart people and Plastic Man for some crazy reason, because maybe we should have some humor, you know, because if you just have like a bunch of smart people, as you know, Zalbin, it's boring as fuck. So you got to have somebody who brings some, like, you know,
why does Alex know that?
You know, and then so.
Because I'm smart.
And so, like, the.
Weird flex.
I don't know if that's a flex. I thought it was cool, though.
What it is. I'm dumb.
When Plastic Man was like, no, that's my son, you know? I thought that was a nice little moment. There was a lot of stuff that I wasn't sure was going on because, like Justin, I just picked up this issue. But I appreciated that kind of moment. And I thought there was a lot going on, but I feel like overall this is a good comic. And I feel like this was kind of moving them in situations.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're all in the same place here where I missed a bunch of issues of this, but I think what Gene Luen Yang does very well is pepper in little things of humor. There's little things here like Mr. Terrific yelling, I think it's Go Terrifics Go, and people having very side comments about that, where it's like, they have a catchphrase? That's a weird catchphrase. Yeah. Where later on, Simon Stagg, who's the Merkley moraled businessman who is in charge of the Terrifics, he's been attached to this horrible demon monster, and he comes out and he's like, oh great, my legs are back. And there's like these little weird funny moments in the middle of this that I think work very well. So there you go. Avengers number 33 from Marvel Comics by Jason Aaron and Javier Garon. This is continuing the Moon Knight arc, where Moon Knight is fighting the Avengers and taking down the Avengers one by one in order to battle an evil that is coming. Pete, you got to be excited about this because I think he's going to battle Mephisto.
Let's reset everything. Come on, baby. Let's go.
Moon Knight's going to be like, hey, Mephisto, I actually have a real bone to pick with you about your marriage.
Yeah.
And then he'll sigh because it's like that story's so old. Like, I don't know why he'd be bringing it up at this point, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
No, I don't know. This was great. Like Jason Aaron just kind of drawing a bunch of action. It was crazy to kind of see Moon Knight go toe to toe with people like this. You know, first we have him taking out Iron Fist and kind of works his way through. And then there was kind of like a fun moment with Black Panther, just like, get the fuck out of here. But the Thor stuff was crazy. I really like that Thor moment. You know, because like Thor Ragnarok, we kind of see, him, like, you know, kind of the loss of his hammer. So to kind of like see him with that moment again was kind of crazy and fun. Yeah, I think Jason Aaron is having a lot of fun. The art's fantastic. This is a very kind of interesting story. I'm excited to see where this goes.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like Jason Aaron does such a good job with this Avengers run of writing compact issues that the story is like completely clean and clear what's happening. And it's just you're following action sequences after action sequences. Yeah. And it's great here. It's great to see Moon Knight come out and just be a straight up badass throughout. And people being like, oh, you're Moon Knight. You're sort of crazy, right? He's like, yeah. You're dead, son. And then he moves on.
Yeah, yeah.
I really liked that.
And I just one thing to add on, Javier Garon's art is so pleasantly reminiscent of Ed McGuinness without specifically being like a copy of Ed McGuinness. Yeah. It just perfectly fits the book. Great. Just such a fun. Every issue of this has just been so much fun to read. It's just been a blast to read, and I love reading it right now. He's doing a great job. Suicide Squad number 5 from DC Comics, written by Tom Taylor. Excuse me, and art by Bruno Rednew. So the Suicide Squad, as usual, is on a mission, pulling above their weight. Somebody wants to kill them, and they don't want to get their heads blown up. And that's pretty much what's happening. But as usual, also, Tom Taylor takes the basics of the Suicide Squad and just elevates it to a level where he dives into the characters so hardcore that it makes you care about them.
Yeah, this is such a heartbreaking story. And I think Tom Taylor is one of those just a writer who is writing so many different books and just crushing, like churning out great standalone issues in so many of the titles that he's on. And I'm not a big Suicide Squad guy. Like, I'm not always reading it. And this issue, just like the way you're inside the head of these characters and what happens. And I don't want to spoil it, but like, it just really, really got me.
Oh man. Yeah. That one like handshake at the end. But, oh.
I'm talking
and
about
it's
the head
honestly like that's I
what, dude, you just said no spoilers, but that's what it was. It was the handshake before that.
Yes, yes, yes.
Jesus Christ.
That's what happens every time I shake hands with people is their heads explode. Is that
now
what
there's some truth to that now. The handshake is dead, Alex. Don't do it.
Okay, that's true. Fair enough. This title is great, even if you haven't been reading Suicide Squad, worth picking up. Moving on to Exorcisters number 6 from Image Comics, written by Ian Boothby and art by Giselle Lagasse. This is about two sisters, or at least they thought they were two sisters, who were fighting evil from heaven and hell. Turns out one of them is just a dark piece of their soul. And in this issue, they have been tricked by angels. Angels are giving them what they think they desire most, and they have to break out of that. This title is so much fun.
So
good. Like, it made me laugh out loud multiple times over the course of the issue.
I like the part where they were like, come back here and live in heaven where, you know, all your dreams can come true. You know, like, they're just, why would you leave? It was very funny.
Yeah, and the art is sort of in the style of Archie Comics, classic Archie's comic style, and I think that suits the book so well. It's like an elevated version of that, where it's heaven versus hell, and these two like sort of fun, irreverent characters that happen to be basically the same person or a person in their soul. It's really good. Pleasant surprise.
That's a nice way of putting it, because like, it's definitely dirtier. It's definitely more adult than an Archie Comics thing. But if this was a spinoff from Sabrina or something like that, that would not be surprising.
Yeah.
Justice League number 45 from DC Comics, written by Robert Vendetti and pencils by Eddie Barrows. The Justice League has been pretty much taken over by the Spectre, who's gone crazy as usual and is making them fight each other and say very mean things to each other.
Man. Yeah, they get nasty. They get nasty.
It is worse.
You know, coworkers, when you work together for that long at any level, you're going to be mad. Like, the Flash gets a little like, oh, run fast. Like, he's like, gets in their face about running too much.
This, I like this issue, and I always like what Robert Venditti is doing. He is good at scripting action. My only concern with about Justice League right now is it's very light on story on an issue-to-issue basis. It feels like they have one action sequence, and then they kind of move on. So it's fun to read. Eddie Barrows is always great at drawing like just very classic superhero stuff, but I want a little bit, particularly coming off of the previous Justice League run. Like I want a happy medium between here's one big action sequence versus here's 1,000 game changing things happening on this page. Now on to the next page.
I feel like this book feels a lot like Jason Aaron's Avengers, where it's just like, it's a bit lighter. It's like fun. It feels good to read both of these titles right now. But I definitely hear you, Alex, coming off the last like very heavy meal of so much happening in Justice League to this sort of light snack eaten on a Tuscan patio. It feels like you want a little bit more.
I don't know. I liked it. I really liked the kind of, the back and forth and the shit talking. I thought it was good, and I'm excited to see where it goes.
What kind of patio did you feel like you were reading it on, though?
Like underneath a pergola, or was it more sort of an open air patio? Like, because I feel like this is at like when you're at a wedding reception.
Getting gazebo vibes when I was
gazebo.
Reading.
Gazebo. I feel like this is when you're at a wedding reception and you just want one more appetizer, and it's just not quite coming. You know?
Yeah. Or that there's that one person who's got like the best appetizers, but they're like not circling where you are. Oh, it's very frustrating.
That's why you always stand by the kitchen and you never leave that position at any party.
Smart.
Yeah.
Smart.
Classic scumbag move.
Rogue Planet number one from Oni Press, written by Cullen Bunn and illustrated by Andy McDonald. As you could probably tell from the number one, this is a new title from Oni Press, where a bunch of folks go into space and some fucked up things happen.
I mean, at this point, why does anyone respond to like a help beacon? You know, I mean, come on, every time we see something in space and it's like, oh, there's a distress signal, let's go respond. It never goes well.
I love leaning into that trope, though, for this book. Like, I think Cullen Bunn, particularly for the script perspective, does a really good job of just hitting that classic alien, like, we're just sort of scrappy kind of marine types who are doing our job, whatever. Oh, this is terrible.
We're just a bunch of junkers trying to get our nut. And then, whoops, here we are, and bunch of alien town. So, yes, it definitely is that that premise played out. But what I like, I think the little flourishes here are really cool. Like, I like the way that rather than them just being in, like, dormant tubes, they're drone-piloted by AI technology. So they're actually piloting the ship, but just not consciously. Like, those little, like, extra idea moments in the classic sci-fi premise and trope really elevate this, I think.
Yeah, I agree. Pete, were you scared by this one?
I don't know. I don't know if I agree completely. I thought it was still pretty tropey to me, and I was like, all right. As soon as I get on a landing and I see a ton of fucking spaceships that have all been, I start running for my fucking ship and getting on board and taking the fuck off because this isn't going to end well. But apparently I'm the only one with common sense. So
Let me put it into a context that I think really speaks more to you.
Okay, great.
You're walking the streets of Philadelphia.
Okay.
And you get a homing beacon from inside a cheesesteak place that you really like.
Okay, right.
So you're like, oh, a homing beacon in there. There's trouble. Maybe I could nab a little cheesesteak while I'm in there. I feel like maybe you roll the dice a little bit more. Maybe you go in and all of a sudden, aliens.
Mm, yeah, nope. I don't fall for homing beacons anymore, bro.
Not anymore.
Not it's anymore. 2020, man. You can't do
it.
It
burned too
it's
many
It's not
times.
2019. I mean, God.
The year of the beacon.
Basketful of Heads, number 7 from DC Comics, boy. Written by Joe Hill, illustrated by Leo Max. This is, very sadly, I think, the last issue of this title.
It's the end of the story. I'm surprised that it all wrapped up in this issue.
Me too. It is about a girl. She finds an axe that when she chops people, it keeps their heads animate. And she has got embroiled in a mystery story, an embezzled story, a murder story, a bunch of other stories that are happening on this small island, I guess, Peninsula, yep. something like that.
I think it's an island.
And man, this issue is so sad.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking. Yeah,
just as the plot points unfold. So well done, though.
I agree. I loved every issue of this comic. So good. And what I think Joe Hill does a great job here is you really want to believe in the couple.
Yeah.
And
Joe Hill hates marriages, man. That you didn't even give him a chance.
He does such a good job of making you wonder, like, is I forget the guy's name. Is he good or is he bad?
Yeah.
And it feels like it's going to be great. And then some stuff happens and we won't say maybe, but, really well done. And the art's fantastic. I love the sort of fantasy element backstory. Great.
And they do a great job of like setting up, like when she was kind of like, thrown in the water and you know, the axe is down there. Like, this is just great stuff that happens in the last issue and then picks it right up there. And like, the action, all the gore and the violence that Joe Hill does so well is fantastic. But it's just one of those things where you're hoping against hope that somehow this relationship's going to work out. And you got that sick little doom buggy VW car in there. And oh, man, it's just it's heartbreaking. You know, I was hoping they could ride off in the sunset in that bad boy, but nope.
Pete, at what point in your life do you think you'll own a dune buggy?
Well, it depends. You know, it really depends on where we're going as a society. But hopefully,
I think we're moving toward dune buggy.
Yeah, yeah. I'm open for a dune buggy, bro.
You're gonna have to leave Philly, but.
Look, I get it. As a comic book reader, you're probably used to spending time inside. But want a way to capture the outdoors throughout your week without actually having to go outside? Then you'll love Atomic Child. Don't worry, it's not the comic book sort of Atomic Child where you're going to turn into a Hulk or anything. Atomic Child is an artist-run brand inspired by nature. They capture the great outdoors through unique designs on everything from stickers to blankets, water bottles, mugs, pins, patches, and much more. You can check it all out at AtomicChild.com. Atomic Child, we bring nature to you. Well, we don't. They do. We're just sponsored by them this episode. Again, that's AtomicChild.com. Marauders number 10 from Marvel Comics, written by Jerry Duggan and art by Stefano Caselli. This book, as we all know, is a piece of garbage because they killed off Kitty Pryde a couple of issues back, threw her into the water, and I didn't even bother to read it.
Are you serious?
No, of course. Ooh. I read it. I like Jerry Duggan, and I love Stefano Caselli's art, so of course I read it. But they did kill off Kitty Pryde.
You get two letters.
This, what?
There are
two letters of this book. So this is the mutant book where they're kind of pirates.
You get two letters.
You know how I love letters, Pete. Big fan.
Especially you have a lot of love letters that you've written to Kitty Pryde. So it must be nice to get one from her.
Yes, exactly. So while they avoid talking about what happened to Kitty Pryde, they are dealing with some mutants. Or rather, some humans who have developed some mutant dampening technology. They go and take care of them over the course of the issue. This is great. And I love, like, I hate and I love to the point about the Kitty Pryde thing. Like, I hate that I don't know what happened to Kitty Pryde and that she's probably dead. And they can't resurrect her. But I love the balls of Jerry Duggan being like, nope, we're not going to resolve this next issue. We're going to wait at least 5 issues before we explain what's going on to her. Like, it's infuriating because she is one of my favorite characters of all time, but it's very well done.
Yeah, this is a crazy issue. And normally in comic books, I hate reading, especially like letters and shit like that. But I was surprised how into this I was because I knew what was going on. I felt like it was really, it's one of those rare things where it's like you get a big chunk of text and you're kind of like, fuck you, man. I bought a comic book. But It's done in such a way that really makes you have to read it and want to read it.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like when the words are in a story, I have to read them. In the same way that, like, a TV shows I'm watching is on, I have to watch it.
Huh.
Mm. What did you think about this book, Justin?
Nope, that's it. No, I like this. It is funny, like, there's a whole section up front where the X-Men on Krakoa are making whiskey or scotch.
Oh, yeah.
By aging Tempo, having Tempo age the barrels. And that's such a thing where it's like, it does feel like the X-Men stories are like, look at this, we did this cool thing. And it does make me want some sort of tether to, like, hey, let's all keep this, let's keep a story going here, rather than it's like, look, we made this weird scotch over here.
or make the whole comic book about making scotch, you know, what's the process like, where'd you get the ingredients, what's going
on? Justin, I'm really surprised that you didn't like that part, because I thought this was right up your alley. You know, you would rather have the X-Men just play baseball and hang out than actually do stuff. So I thought them standing around talking about how they're using their powers to make really nice booze would be right in your sweet spot.
I did like that spot. But I think what I'm saying is it feels like a lot of these books are like showing off cool ideas, but there aren't the emotional tethers that usually hold the X-Men together aren't there. Like there's a scene between Storm and Forge, who had a very tumultuous and intense relationship, I believe, back in the day. And there's no mention of that. They're just having a conversation about like doing some shit. And I think that is what the X-Men are right now, or like there's just so much happening that we don't get to slow down and find out what's happening. And the reason I like those baseball games is because the plot relaxes for a little bit so that the characters can exercise some of their emotional things when they're on their downtime. And I'm starting to really crave that with all of these X-Men books.
Yeah, I think that is a good point with the Forge Storm thing, because I definitely felt that as well. But I think this is well plotted, and Jerry Duggan does find some fun bits throughout that make it worth checking out.
I agree. And like, I like the read. I think it's just a feeling across the line I have where it's like, even if it's just one book, is like, this is the emotional book. I'll read the shit out of that one. but it just feels like it's so different, and I want to feel sort of more of a shape to the line.
But let's move on then to Batman Beyond number 43 from DC Comics, written by Dan Jurgens and pencils by Sean Chen. Batman Beyond is Batman Beyond again. Terry McGinnis is back in the costume. He's working with old Bruce Wayne. They got a new Bat Tower. It's basically returning it to a status quo. I thought this was all right. It's fun. If you like Batman Beyond, why not?
This is a great...
I liked it.
Yeah, Batman Beyond. I thought this was like a great kind of... Felt like it came right from the animated series. I thought it was great. Even that, like the excitement that Batman had for being back, I thought was really fun. It's kind of a... I like this version of Batman because instead of it being, you know, the dark responsibility, here's someone who's having fun at their job and like is smiling as they're doing the work. So it's a nice juxtaposition to kind of have this Batman work a little bit.
And you said Justin position, right?
No, I didn't.
That's the position I'm in.
But also you get to, you know, fly through a concrete wall that's fake. I mean, who doesn't
also,
love to
I don't
do
want
that?
To stop you again, but that's kind of my word.
Yeah.
Concrete
juxtaposition.
Actually, to be honest, I believe juxtaposition was first coined by Francesco Mobilizations. I like this a lot. I think you're spot on, Pete. Like, to see a Batman having fun is great. It's right in line with the original cartoon.
Yeah,
and I'm interested in the story. Like, I like the last page reveal in this issue, and it was fun.
Yeah.
Farmhand number 15 from Image Comics, created, written, and drawn by Rob Gilroy, who we probably know best from Chew, but obviously he's been doing this book for a while. This is about a world where somebody has developed a plant-based solution for people to regenerate their limbs and pieces of their body. Obviously, it goes horribly wrong. It turns into sort of a zombie cult thing. And we find out some secrets and lies this issue. Main thing for me, I just really enjoy Rob Gilroy's art. I think it's so good.
Yeah.
It's so like specifically and humorously detailed throughout that it is a joy to read his books most of the time.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, I agree. This was I was really caught up in the emotional story between sort of these two characters in two different timelines just locked in battle with each other, and the shifting power from the two different moments in their lives where they shot each other in the head, basically.
Yeah.
Very cool. And, you know, when if bad stuff's going to happen, let it happen in a barn. Because, you know.
I couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
Some of the worst stuff that's ever happened to me has happened in a barn.
That's
right. I'm sorry to hear about that.
Pottery, right. Pottery barn specifically.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. Yeah. I forgot.
I was getting some shelves. It was not great.
Yeah.
He-Man and the Masters of the Multiverse, number 6 from DC Comics, written by Tim Seeley and art by Tom Derenick. It all comes down to this. All of the He-Mans from all of the multiverse and who we thought was a Skeletor all coming together to stop the anti-He-Man. This book is wild. I have no emotional connection to He-Man, but Tim Seeley, I had the action figures, but like the cartoon was stupid. I'm sorry.
Hey, fuck you, man. Fuck you.
If you're attacking
Tim Seeley wrote a great story here.
Yeah, Tim Seeley could pull this off with all the different versions of all the things happening at one time. Tim Seeley was able to pull this off because this is confusing as fuck. Because I watched the cartoon as a kid, was a big fan, had all the action figures.
The beauty of the cartoon is it's absolutely not confusing because it's very stupid.
Yeah.
Which they talk about. Like, they basically say that in this comic at a certain point where they're like, because the cartoon versions of He-Man show up in the book, and what do they call them? Overly earnest He-Man?
Mm-hmm.
Or something.
No, it's something like that. It's like simple and annoying He-Man or something like that.
Yeah, annoyingly earnest or annoyingly honest He-Man. And at the end, when everything, spoiler, returns to normal, they're like, well, they're going to go back to learning lessons every day like a bunch of idiots.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you want to learn things, yeah, that's dumb, Zalbin. Yeah, what the fuck?
What are you?
You were like, they're going to go back to learning lessons. I think it's nice to learn lessons at the end of the day, you know?
Nope, sure, not into learning anything, let alone lessons.
Yeah.
This is way better than it has any business being. And I mean that as a compliment. Touchy Feely Tim Seeley, just like of all the a writer we've watched or read over the course of our time doing this show and podcast, like over a decade of seeing his work, really just a great storyteller and story manager, like juggling all these elements.
Yeah.
Really great. And the name of the He-Man is Annoyingly Chipper He-Man.
That's what it is. There you go. Yeah, it's good. The 6 issues, you can go back. I'm sure it'll be collected. You can pick it up that way. But fun read, even if you don't care about He-Man, just like me. Moving on to another thing that I'm going to need Pete to explain to me. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Urban Legends number 23 from IDW, story by Gary Carlson, art by Frank Fosco. What is happening in this book, Pete?
Yeah, what the fuck, dude? Holy shit. Last time I read, like, Raph is on the wrong side now, and like, that was crazy.
This is like playing the 15th level of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles arcade game and being like, what's the story? What happened so far? Because...
No, this is like if you had an ant farm and you left it for a couple years and came back and they were like, yo, we live here now. We live in your apartment. Get the fuck out of here.
Yes, and we moved out of the farm.
Did you like this, Pete? Because I read this and I was like, this has to be right in Pete's wheelhouse, but now I'm not so sure.
No, it's great. It's fun to kind of go back and see what's going on with the Turtles, especially if you haven't read it for a while. Like, but what's great is it's still the Turtles. Like, even after their brother joined the clan, became Shredder, he needs help. Guess what? They all went. And I like the new Leo missing an arm but got a sword for a hand. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I guess when I was a kid watching the original TMNT series, I always predicted that someday Michelangelo would sell an award-winning novel that Oprah really went to bat for, which is an actual story point in this comic we're talking about.
Also, you know, they say in the cartoon he does machines, and he is a machine.
And Donatello is machines.
Yeah. So
this feels like reading a dream somebody had about the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yes, that's 100% right. It's like, but, and not even someone, a 10-year-old.
Yeah,
this is a 10-year-old me.
Watched the cartoon and then was like, all right, I'll take this from here, you know. But I really love the Eastman variant. That felt very 80s Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles to me. This was fun. This was crazy and over the top. And first off, Justin, why wouldn't Michelangelo write a book of all the adventures that they've been on? And I'm sure his books, Oprah would love it.
If you reread it, the book was a little bit fucked up. This reminds me of when I was a kid, I grew up on the edge of, like, way in the middle of nowhere, but there was a golf course near our house, and this kid lived on the other side of the golf course. He was into comics, and one time I met him in the woods. He was like, look at my drawing. And it was this super fucked up drawing of, like, a guy with a sword, like, stabbing people. I was like, ah, fuck, this kid's going to stab me here. I have to get out of here. And that's what it felt like reading this book. It really brought me back to that horrifying moment.
Oh, fun.
That's nice. So it's fun to relive stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, I don't know how to tell you this, but you never survived that moment, Justin.
Oh,
never I've been survived. Haunting this podcast Ooh. Since I was a child.
Speaking of magic, Books of Magic number 19 from DC Comics, written by David Barnett and art by Tom Fowler. Man, I love this comic. This was so much fun. This is following a young magician in the DC universe slash kind of Vertigo universe, even though that doesn't exactly exist anymore. He meets a new girl who can also do magic. They try to go to the Glastonbury
Festival. She's too casual with it, though.
Instead, they end up at a magical festival and things go to shit from there. Very fun throughout. Always a fan of Tom Fowler's artwork. He is a perfect match for this book about the world's saddest Harry Potter, essentially. I thought this was fun.
Yeah, it was also an interesting idea of, like, you know, kind of going back to something that you thought was great. And, like, we have this one character who just wants to get back to this, like, amazing magic kind of musical festival. And it's kind of, you see what, you know, like he goes through to get it and then what happens. And it's, you can't tell if good guy, bad guy, but by the end kind of seems like a bad guy. But man, what a crazy kind of voyage this comic is. Very interesting storyline, very creative. Amazing art and all the little, like, side characters. It was fun when they showed, like, the group shots and you kind of see, like, little fairies and all the different, like, the artist was having a blast. This was a really creative, cool comic. I really liked it.
Yeah, I was a huge fan of the Books of Magic stories series from back in the day from the Vertigo line. So I like this one, though it sort of comes from a much more sad or negative place. Mm-hmm. And that I want it to sort of be a little more fun for the characters. Everyone seems like life sucks. And that sort of was always a part of Books of Magic, where it was like magic is a little bit of a curse, even though it feels fun and you want to do it. It's like always creating a problem for you. But I just want someone to be having a good time here.
I can see what you're saying. I mean, the main character is definitely, like, beyond sad sack Harry Potter and into just, he's a horrible nerd who I would not want to hang out with, you know?
Yeah.
And I get that. But, like, again, I think there's enough fun details that power through it that make it okay.
Yeah.
Next one to talk about, this is actually, I think, a reprint because it originally came out digitally a couple of months ago when things got shut down. But Star Wars Dr. Aphra number 1 from Marvel Comics, written by Alyssa Wong and art by Marika Cresta. This is, of course, picking up on the Indiana Jones of the Star Wars universe, is I think the fair way of putting her, like the evil Indiana Jones. And here, as usual, she gets embroiled in something that is way over her head and messes it up as badly as possible. I think this captured the tone of Dr. Aphra pretty much perfectly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. It is, Indiana Jones is a better comparison. I was going to say it's female Han Solo, and with a bad guy Wookiee at her side and doing all the sort of getting out of scrapes thing. It's funny, this comic though, Red, really, like, it doesn't really need to exist in the Star Wars universe at all. Yeah. Which I think is, I guess, a compliment. Like, Dr. Aphra is the only original Star Wars character to really catch on out of the Marvel comics, right?
Yeah, I think that's fair. And like you're saying, there's stuff that goes so heavily mystical in this book to the point where, which sounds crazy for, like, they have the Force and all of these other mystical Jedi things, but it always seems very lightly magical in Star Wars. This is full-on magic stuff happening most of the time. And even as she explains in the middle of the book, she says, there's always a scientific explanation for this stuff. There's not really. And it's certainly, you know, so yeah, it definitely feels side to the Star Wars books, but that's okay.
Yeah.
Pete, what'd you think about this one?
It was fun. I mean, you know, the kind of, I was happy that there was a Wookiee in there. So, you know, it was cool.
You say that a lot. You say that about, like, different buildings you go in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, if there's a Wookiee in a building, I'm going to be happy. So, yeah.
Great. Thanks, Pete. Yeah, Aquaman number 59 from DC Comics, written by Kelly Sue DeConnick and pencils by Robson Rocha. This is continuing Kelly Sue DeConnick's storyline where Aquaman is... he's fighting his brother Orm. He's looking for Mera. They're looking for the princess, his daughter, who has been stolen. And meanwhile, Aqualad is also on a search of his own. What'd you think about this book?
Well, this is cool because I like the fact that it was like, you know, he charges, you know, King Orm and was just like, whoa. And then instead of fighting, it was like, hey, what's going on? Hey, man, we're cool. Why would you think I did this? And then he kind of, like, leaves to go figure it out. So I was happy that it wasn't, like, a battle for no reason where one person wants something and instead of talking it out, fights the wrong person kind of thing. Even though it's a little different from kind of what happened. But I was happy about that part. I think the art's great. I like the kind of Aquaman in the story. I believe it as Aquaman. So I'm interested to see where this goes. I think this does a good job of, like, setting up things to come in a way that makes you want to check out the next issue.
Yeah, really nice art, like very underwater flowy art. And I really like the way that Kelly Sue DeConnick has positioned all the characters. There's no real, like, this character's good, this character's bad here.
Yeah.
Ocean Master is now the king, and he, like, does a lot of stuff that is, like, very reasonable here. Mm-hmm. Aquaman seems like he's a little out of control.
Right.
You get a reveal at the end. And I like that I don't know exactly. I feel like the best Aquaman stories, Aquaman is just, like, a little bit out of sorts and trying to figure out what's going on in his life. I also like Dolphin as a character. Nice to see her back.
Yeah, let's move on to an Image Comics book, Mercy number 2, written, art, and colorist Mirka Andolfo. We talked about the first issue of this book, I don't know, I guess months ago at this point, and this is another one that kind of felt like a fever dream a little bit. There was a lot of stuff going on, but it ultimately settled on this malevolent entity in the form of a woman heading to a small town, and people think she's an angel. Maybe there's some devils in the town as well. I think we get a little more clarity of this issue, and I like this. Like, I like this a lot more than the second issue. It felt very clear what was going on. There was maybe they tackled too much of the first issue, but the art is very solid and cartoony, even though eventually it errs, not errs, but it becomes super horrific at points.
Yeah.
There's a great reveal at the end, and I liked a lot of the details throughout as well. How'd you feel about it?
Yeah, I thought the art was really great. I thought it was an interesting story. It took a lot of different, just when you thought, like, oh, okay, the little kid's going to blow this open or whatever, it took a lot of different turns, which was cool and creative. I also like the reveal. I'm interested to see how this goes. But just in general, if you're at a party and you see someone who doesn't eat or is concerned about food at all, you know that they're a bad person and they, you know,
they don't eat.
Yeah, if you're like, you know, because she was like, oh, yeah, I don't eat food, you know.
What if they had a big lunch?
Yeah. What if they're just like standing by the kitchen waiting for the hors d'oeuvres to come out?
See, I trust that person because they know how important food is.
No, that's a classic scumbag move. And that's my review of this book. No, I like this book as well. I like the way they threw us into the action and are slowly backing out into what the sort of premises. And I feel like we're going to learn that maybe this woman that has become possessed by this Mercy, I feel like it's Black Mercy, like the DC flower, feels like very much in that vibe. Mm-hmm. A plant that takes over a person. And I think we're going to realize that she has a connection with a lot of the people in the town.
Yep. Definitely a good new one to check out. The Flash, number 754 from DC Comics, written by Joshua Williamson and pencils by Rafa Sandoval. I mentioned we had Joshua Williamson on our live show this week. Had a very long, very good chat with him about the Flash and all of his other titles. So definitely go check that out. But this is the Flash teaming up with the Reverse Flash, going to take down Paradox, who's the big new villain that he's facing down. Another just, I think, good, reliable issue of the Flash on this title. And I think there's a lot of, like, very good character bits in particular between the Reverse Flash and Flash that show off the differences between them. And the Paradox twist, which I don't really want to spoil, is broke my brain a little bit, but in exactly the right way for a character called Paradox.
Yeah, I agree. I thought that twist was so smart. There are a couple twists in this book that I thought were great. We said this on the other podcast, but writing the Flash is difficult because there's so many things that are already like so many like hurdles positioned in the different timelines of the Flash, and you have to sort of jump over and through them. And I think this book does a great job of doing that. And I want to shout out the Raphael Grandpa cover. Was so good. Such a
was
cool.
Was that
cover.
The one where he's stretching?
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's got the little lightning bolts by his knees. That was kind of cool.
Yeah. Wait, that reminds me. Sorry, I meant to talk about this, but Gabriel Rodriguez did a cover for Basketful of Heads.
Yes!
A shout out to his classic Lock and Key cover, which is also awesome.
So good.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is a good issue of The Flash. Let's move on to what I'm excited to hear Pete's thoughts of, in particular, G.I. Joe number 6 from IDW, written by Paul Allure, art by Chris Evenhouse. This is following a bunch of members of G.I. Joe who are trying to recruit members of Cobra. It's a very different style for a G.I. Joe book. I, like He-Man, have no emotional connection to G.I. Joe.
What
but
the
I know
fuck?
Pete, you care about it very deeply. What do you think about this book?
How do you have no emotional connection to these things that were such a big part of my childhood? It's
because
really
upsetting. I don't like America, man.
Wow. He was rooting for Cobra.
Yeah,
don't have a connection to G.I. Joe. We weren't allowed to watch it because they had guns.
Oh, wow. I'm sorry, man. I'm sorry.
Be perfectly honest, like, I did not like G.I. Joe because I was like, what is this? This is like an army, but they have a specific thing for each of them. That sounds dumb.
Fuck you. That is not dumb. All right. Shipwreck was an idol. Okay. Gung Ho. Unbelievable. I mean, Roadblock. These were people who were important in our lives growing up. They shaped who we were. The lessons at the end made people better people.
Pete, what would your G.I. Joe thing and name be?
Wait, can I take this one? Because I know it. It's cheesesteak.
I knew you were going to say
that. Cheesesteak. Wait, where's cheesesteak? He's not. He slept in today.
Yeah, he's covered in cheese whiz, man. He's covered in whiz.
Okay, call Alex or codename podcast.
Yeah, I might be codenamed Vodka Soda. But anyway, I think that, like, this was very different. This was like a G.I. Joe mission that seemed very douchey, and people risk lives for things that then ended up didn't matter at all. But I love the reveal at the end. Anytime you're going to do a G.I. Joe comic, always reveal Snake Eyes at the end. That's how you win. Fucking Snake Eyes, baby.
It's not a reveal if it's always there, I would say. I love this comic. I thought this was a great issue. I, too, not a big G.I. Joe fan, but I like the premise of the book that Cobra sort of has taken over America. So the Joes are on the run, and they're just trying to find a beachhead. They can start to turn the tides against Cobra, and they are not doing a great job. And I thought this is really well done.
The art in particular was very good. Yeah. I didn't write down the colorist for this, so I apologize to whoever the colorist is, but it's a clear collaboration between Chris Evenhouse and whoever did the colors, which is very crisp. And like you're saying, Pete, a very different look for G.I. Joe.
Yeah. So it was that, almost like a Luna Brothers art a little bit on
a
this.
Little bit. Yeah, I could see that. It struck me a little bit more. It was like Jamie McKelvey a little bit.
Oh, that's a good call. Yeah.
Which I liked.
Go ahead.
No. Go ahead, Pete.
I was just going to say, I sure shit wouldn't get on a fucking Cobra train. It's not a good idea, man.
All aboard! Cobra train!
Venom number 25 from Marvel Comics, written by Donny Cates, art by Mark Bagley. And there is a throwback Venom story by David Michelinie and pencils by Ron Lim. So Venom is on an island, or at least he was on an island, as we find out. He's left it by the end here. He has been taken over by the Carnage symbiote, and his son has discovered the ability to destroy symbiotes, and we're dealing with some big mythological stuff here, big sea change by the end of the issue. What do you think about the end of this storyline?
Well, I really want to talk about the second storyline because it was really a lot of fun.
Wow. And, you love the throwback.
And, man, there's nothing like some canned peaches, man. I tell you.
Wow. Nah.
But, yeah, this was interesting. The way they kind of cut back and forth was a little confusing between the T-Rex battle and the caged,
mental cage.
Yeah, the mental cage with him and his son was a little kind of crazy for me to understand everything that was going on. The jumping around was a little confusing, but it was interesting the way it kind of started with this, like, six panel interrogation kind of grid, and then kind of grew from there, but then we went back to it. So interesting, amazing art. I'm interested to see where this goes, but the backup story was a lot of fun and definitely worth the price of admission.
Wow. I think Donny Cates writes so many of his Venom issues like it's the last issue he's ever going to write. And I mean that as a compliment. Like, he's always sort of really recontextualizing and re-examining who the character is in so many issues. And this is a great issue where you really get inside Eddie's head throughout the sort of interview sections of it. And I thought Venom Island was going to be this huge, sprawling, big epic. And actually, it was a pretty contained story setting up the next big epic battle with Null.
Yeah, this is, to the point that you're making, it feels like it's go big or go home with the Venom arcs, like G.I. Joe, like the other things. I don't really have an emotional connection to Venom. He is not my favorite villain of all time.
Venom.
But what Donny Cates is doing with the title is so smart and so big, and it's so mythology building. I can't help but enjoy it every issue out of the gate.
What do you prefer, Venom or Venmo?
Oh, great question. Venom doesn't demand that I leave a note every time I read it, so I prefer Venom.
Wow. Bold.
Nice. Strong. Yeah.
Very annoying feature on the Venmo app. Last one we're going to talk about on maybe our longest stack podcast ever, Outer Darkness 2, number 2 from Image Comics, created and written by John Layman, created art and cover by Afu Chan, created art and cover by Rob Gilroy. So if you didn't pick up the first issue of this is crossing over, of course, Outer Darkness, which is a space set saga that is mostly about demons and magic, and Chu, which is a detective book about a guy who eats stuff and can find out the memories. Pete, what is your question?
Well, I wanted to say, you know, I know in Comic Book Club, we don't say
talk about
what
Comic Book Club.
We don't say what our favorite, what we're looking forward to anymore. But this was my favorite of the stack. And this was the one that I was most looking forward to. It is so great to have Chu back. And Chu is so creative and so weird in so many different ways. It's such a great book. They even get meta and it doesn't bother me. They like make fun of themselves. They make fun of the genre. It was really crazy. All the things that happen in this book. Art's amazing. It's really funny. It's definitely worth picking up.
Just a quick little note. The only reason we haven't done what we're looking forward to is because comics haven't been coming out.
But they are now. So what the fuck?
Pete, you could have said this off of the podcast recording. Anyway, I made myself a note because you're right, and we can go back to doing that. Is that cool, Pete?
Oh, thanks, man. Appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks for bringing it up during a podcast recording.
When we hit the hour,
it's the only time we talk anymore, Zalb. So, you know, that's what we do.
We text basically every day.
It is true. We are very connected, and I love it. It's funny. This book, I think, is great. It goes meta in a way that I'm often like, that's annoying. But I thought it really worked here.
Yeah, it did.
And it's funny. This book feels much more like it's a chew book set in the world of Outer Darkness as opposed to a true crossover. So I'm curious if they're going to pivot back toward Outer Darkness in the next issue. Fun. I like the way the premise really crystallized in this second issue.
Yeah, it's crazy what a left turn this takes in the first couple of pages here. It is so different. Just plot, it tracks, but it's so different plot-wise from the first issue. But still, very funny. The art is great. The jokes are great. I really enjoy this quite a bit. It's like it's the rare continuation that doesn't take away from the ending of Chew for very specific plot reasons that they built in there.
Yeah.
And the like reveal of the like Ghost Rider chicken at the end was fucking awesome.
Yes. Spoilers. All right, folks, if you want to support this podcast, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday at 7 p.m. directly to the internet at Crowdcast and YouTube, iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe and listen to this podcast. Comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. And hey, we'll see you at the virtual comic book shop.
As always, shout out to our boys Francesco Mobilizations. shout out to my G.I. Joe's podcast, and of course, Cheesesteak.